What are you doing up in the middle of the night?
Actually, I was wondering why I can't find a girlfriend with a normal job.
You check your black book.
I haven't seen that thing in weeks. I think you've nicked it.
Hey, I miss you, dude.
I miss you too, Cadet.
Anyhow, sleep tight.
Now, yeah, thanks. Bye-bye.
So why didn't you tell her you were working?
She worries.
Oh, the man didn't want her to worry. Dudette.
Come on, man.
Hey, partner, tell me something. How expensive of a ring are you going to buy this lady? You know, my sensitive Gemini self can't handle too much more overtime.
Well, I'm just going to get her a decent ring, something that's befitting her style and class and sophistication. It's not something that you would know anything about.
Okay.
Welcome back, Vice fans, to the Vice of Miami podcast for show number 64 and our first one for the year 2024. Happy New Year, everybody. Tim and I
are happy New
glad
Year.
You're joining us. We hope you enjoyed the last show covering Duty and Honor and their Christmas fun. Hope the elves didn't freak you out there a little bit. So, Tim, how was your Christmas? How was your New Year? Anything exciting?
Nothing exciting. It was, we went for Christmas Eve. We went by our neighbors just for a little drop in thing. And then we host another couple on Christmas Day. And then for as far as New Year's, we're watching a lot of college football and pro football. New Year's Day, it was just us. We didn't do anything because we had to fly out the next day for wake and funeral of my aunt. So
it was really quick. Nice. And that's why we're off last week. We're a week late on this. So Tim had a little family duty to take care of. Unfortunately, it's a sad way to come in, but condolences to you on that.
Thank you.
We didn't do much for Christmas. Went to my aunt, went to my in-laws, Christmas Eve, Christmas Day, New Year's. We just stayed here. Didn't host anybody, didn't go anywhere. Just chilled out and watched little YouTube live streamers. Had a lot of fun. Had some hors d'oeuvres. Nice, quiet, kind of quiet holidays. Didn't really have to host anything, I think, the first time in maybe 19, 20 years, which was always great. We got to enjoy it a little bit more. Let's get right into it, Tim. What do you think?
Yep, let's do it, Mark.
Let's do it. All right. So as always, please sit back, relax, grab a beverage, and enjoy the Vice of Maybe podcast covering Season 3, Episode 16, Teresa. And this episode is written by Pamela Norris, directed by Virgil Vogel. The original air date, February 13th, 1987, and it's the 60th episode overall.
And our plot summary for this episode is Crockett plans to marry his latest girlfriend, an ER doctor from the UK. However, she has a dark secret. A major drug dealer whom Sonny has recently busted uses it to both free himself and make Crockett look dirty.
Okay, let's get into the guest stars and the co-stars. First up, we've got Calvin Levels as Rudy Ramos. He was born September 30th, 1954 in Cleveland, Ohio. He's an American actor. His filmography includes What Really Happened to the Class of 65, Ragtime, The Chair, Rock, Point of No Return, Blacklisted, and it's really all we could find out about Calvin.
Next up, we have Helena Bonham Carter as Dr. Teresa Lyons, born May 26, 1966. In London, England. And she's an English actress, of course. Bonham Carter began her career in an obscure 1983 TV film, A Pattern of Roses. Most of her other TV credits were for UK shows. But she does have an extensive movie credits to include Fight Club, Mary Shelley's Frankenstein, Wings of a Dove, Planet of the Apes, Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. Bonham Carter was involved with actor Kenneth Branagh from 1994 to 1999, then Tim Burton in 2001 to 2014, and they have two children. In 2012, Queen Elizabeth II made Bonham Carter a commander of the Order of the British Empire for her services to drama.
Next guest star is Michelle Shea as Dr. Cheney. Shea was nominated for a Tony in the category of Best Actress in a Play for her performance in Seven Guitars in 1996 and has appeared in several on and off Broadway plays. Some of her filmography includes Skokie, Manhunter, He Got Game, ER, and Never Die Alone, and that's pretty much all we could find about Michelle.
Next up, we have Zach Grenier as an IED officer. Born February 12, 1954 in Englewood, New Jersey, is an American stage and screen actor. His filmography includes Talk Radio, Equalizer, Delirious, Tommy Boy, White Lies, Twister, Shaft, 24, and She Said. We could find nothing else on his biography at this time.
Continuing down the list, we've got Timmy Capello as Arzola. He's born May 3rd, 1955 in Silver Lake, New York, and he's an American musician who made his acting debut in this episode. Capello plays the saxophone, which is heard in the song We Don't Need Another Hero, performed by Tina Turner. He's also performed with Peter Gabriel, Eric Carmen, Ringo Starr, including his All-Star Band, and Carly Simon. Some other acting credits include Equalizer, Hearts of Fire, What's Love Got to Do with It. No personal info can be found on Timmy.
Next up, we have Richard Chavez as D.A. Gordon Martinez, born October 9th, 1951 in Jacksonville, Florida. And he's an American actor. Credits other than this Vice episode is Eight is Enough, Fire on the Mountain, Ceasefire, and MacGyver. Again, nothing could be found on his personal life at this time.
And rounding out the guest stars, we've got Brad Dourif as Joey Wyatt. He's born March 18, 1950 in Huntington, West Virginia, and he's an American stage and screen actor. Dourif began his career as part of the Huntington Community Players, which is a local theater troupe, while he was attending Marshall University. Then he moved to New York to pursue his acting dreams on the advice of fellow West Virginian actress, Conchata Farrell, who was Berta from Two and a Half Men. His first movie was 1975's film WW and the Dixie Dance Kings, and he's got an extensive movie credits to his name. His most recent movie appearance was The Shuro Process. His TV appearances include his 76 debut in the movie The Mound Builders, with, again, a long list of TV roles. His most recent TV appearance as the voice of Chucky in the AMC Plus live-action version of Chucky. And our co-stars, we have Susan Boguski as Woman and Frank Logan as Judge. All right, let's check out some Miami Vice in the news. We've got a fun one here, I guess you could say. On New Year's Day, I believe it was, at the Bayside Marketplace Mall by the Bayside Marina where St. Vitus Dance was docked, there were unsubstantiated reports of 10-foot-tall aliens wandering around, prompting a very large police presence. The police presence was true. You could see all the YouTube videos, whatever, on social media. There is video, allegedly, believe it if you want, of these things. But yeah, we're not going to comment or entertain comment on the other alleged issue here of why the police were really there. So we're just going to go with aliens as the cause they were here. Maybe Noogie and Izzy were just having a little fun.
The Noog Man. I'll go with that one.
Yes.
And also from this past week, American and British actor, singer, director David Soul passed away on January 4th at the age of 80. Most known for the other iconic police show, Starsky and Hutch. He also directed the episode No Exit of Miami Vice. He passed away in London with his family by his side. Rest in peace, David.
And then I got one more little tidbit here. Today, January 9th in 1981, is when Phil Collins released his first solo song. You might know it as In the Air Tonight.
Our episode begins with Crockett and Tubbs on a stakeout of the home of a drug dealer named Joey Wyatt. Crockett calls Dr. Teresa his latest main squeeze, and they have a conversation about not being able to see each other because of work schedules. Crockett didn't want to worry her, so he didn't tell her anything about the stakeout, because Tubbs was sitting right next to him when he's having this conversation. And then they start talking about marriage and how Sonny is intending on proposing to Dr. Teresa. Meanwhile, we have Switek listening in on Wyatt from the former Bugbusters van, and he learns that a chopper with 100K in coke is on the way to Wyatt's home. Suddenly, private security rolls up with a resident who gets out and states that these guys have been here since 4 o'clock during this exchange. When they're having to try to prove that they're cops to the security guy, Wyatt makes the OCB team, especially because security came rolling up with their, I believe it was yellow lights on their car.
Yeah, rent-a-cops.
Rent-a-cops. Wyatt makes the team, and then they start beginning to dump the coke and bagging cash as Crockett, Tubbs, and Switek enter. Once again, we have another shootout begins. Wyatt thinks that this is a ripoff, and then the incoming chopper is signaled to turn around, and we see coke being dumped all over the causeway. And then at Switek, there goes 6 months of surveillance right down the tubes.
And you thought all the crocodiles down there were crazy. Just wait till they start eating some of the fish that were ingesting some of this coke, huh?
Or aliens.
Yeah, aliens. Maybe that's what happened. They gestated down in the waters and they finally just came up. All right, so now we're on the St. Vitus dance. A short scene on the St. Vitus dance. Crockett and Dr. Teresa, they're each doing their own work. I think he's got papers and tapes all laid about here on the bed or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Which is he's prepping for Wyatt's case. And then two of them, they're, you know, just cross-talking about, you know, talking about potential engagement. And then we learn here that the doctor is taking meds for some back pain. And then they do their stuff. They do the tango. And now we shift to the ER that the good doctor works in. And then we see her finishing up with a couple of gunshot wound patients when she gets called for a patient with a headache in a different room, obviously. She meets with this patient named Rudy, and it just so happens these two know each other, and he's bringing her some dope, some black market meds. In exchange for this service, he wants her to snag an address for somebody else from one of Crockett's evidence reports. He wants the good doctor here to do a little dirty work for him. When she refuses, Rudy threatens to dime her out, which would be bad for her and Crockett. We've got a nice, respected doctor here doing some drugs, whatever she's doing. And now her boyfriend, Crockett, being a cop, ain't going to look good. He tells her, just look over his shoulder and get what he needs.
Well, anyway, you didn't come here to give me that.
Mm-mm. No. I need you to get me something from your boyfriend. It's an address written on the evidence report of any Miami Vice file.
Forget it.
Nah, I don't think so, muchacha. I started talking about where you been and what you been doing. The police, they're gonna come down on your boyfriend, and he's gonna have to forget all about you.
So now we move on to court, and I'm not sure if this, and I'm just gonna throw this out there, Mark. It said U.S. courthouse on the outside of the building, but it seems like this was a municipal, this was a city case. So
right, like a local case, right?
Why were they at a U.S. courthouse? Because there's no federal charges on this that I know. If they're dealing with IED, all this type of stuff throughout the episode, which was you know, Metro Dade. Just right. Thought. So anyway, we are at a courthouse where Crockett is testifying at Wyatt's arraignment, where he basically lays out the charges. Wyatt's lawyer says he's willing to put up his Biscayne Hotel for bail, which the judge denies. Rudy shows up, and Tubbs tells Crockett that he busted him years back when he first rolled into Miami. Rudy talks to Wyatt, tells himself something, and Tubbs said there's no way that Rudy is in Wyatt's league at all. Then we flip back to OCB, where Tubbs tells Crockett that Rudy Ramos is being represented by Andrew Greenberg, who was Wyatt's attorney. Crockett shows Tubbs the engagement ring for Teresa. And he said, if something he could not give Caroline because he didn't have the coin, I think she got like a gold band, simple gold band. That was it. He tells Tubbs he's going to pop the question that night. Tubbs tells him, before you do that, stop by the evidence warehouse and see the officer in charge, because apparently Crockett forgot to sign in one of Wyatt's surveillance audio tapes.
Well, see what happens when you want to pop the question you're in love? Your work starts failing there.
He's not on his function.
So now we're at this evidence warehouse, which it kind of stuck out. It didn't really stick out because it was nondescript, but it stuck out like a sore thumb as far as, if this is evidence, why is it like a little shack out in the middle of freaking nowhere with a chain link fence? Kind of nondescript, yeah. Or whatever. I mean, you think it'd look a little bit more secure. I don't know. So anyway, we're at this evidence warehouse. Guys from Wyatt's crew here arrive there with the evidence report, allegedly that they forgot to file. They're playing a game here. They kill the gate guards and pull up and park the van near the building, and then they take off. A caddy picks them up, and they pass by Crockett as he's arriving to sign his paperwork that he forgot to sign. The van blows up at the building, leaving Crockett standing there in bewilderment. A little bit later, Tubbs arrives there for the investigation and tells Crockett that the van was rigged with the radio control device. A little bit sophistication here. And now at the hospital, very, very quick scene here. We see Teresa shooting up, possibly heroin, and we're assuming in a closet here between her toes. Obviously, you don't want people to see your track marks on your arms if you're a doctor, right?
Right.
Even if you're...
And it went, just one thing about this particular scene is that when I was first taking notes, I thought, were these guys pretending to be Crockett? Was like when he said, hey, I forgot to file this report. Because as we're going to learn in a second here, or two, there's something about what that guy handed to the officer in charge of the
warehouse. I know what you're talking about. Yeah, but maybe it could have been theoretical that these were other cops that forgot to sign another form, right? I mean, if this warehouse was, I guess you could say, shoddy and uncontrolled as it was, I guess it's safe to assume that other cops would forget paper. Who knows? But we'll see. I know what you're leading to, but we'll see.
All right. So at OCB, a DA is talking with Crockett, Tubbs, and Marty, telling them that evidence from 8 other cases besides Wyatt's was in that warehouse. He questions how the bombers got the address to the warehouse. He tells the team that Wyatt will be kicked loose if they do not come up with more evidence against him. Marty tells Crockett that all lead investigators who had evidence at that warehouse will be suspended pending investigation. So basically, Crockett's on desk duty until they find out who leaked the address. As he walks out of Marty's office, Tubbs brings him a photocopy of one of his case files that was found at the scene. And I believe that was the one that was used as a ruse to get on the warehouse grounds. Crockett questions who would have access files. Then he stops. It dawns on him. He gives this look as if he knows who it was.
I had evidence on 8 different cases in that warehouse besides Wyatt's.
How long can you keep him locked up?
If I stall the paperwork, maybe 48 hours max. But if we don't come up with something to replace what we lost in that warehouse, Wyatt's gonna walk. Any leads on how in God's name they found that warehouse?
No.
Well, gentlemen, I gotta give a statement.
This one's a beauty.
Crockett. They'll probably suspend every lead investigator who had evidence at the warehouse.
So you're saying that not only is my case destroyed and Wyatt takes a walk, but I take a suspension?
Until they find out how the location was leaked, you're all assigned to administration duties.
You're all assigned to administration duties.
Classic Castillo.
So now we're at the hospital here. Crockett shows up to see Teresa, and she walks into an exam room here, and he's just got this look on his face like, I know that you know that why I'm here type of thing. He didn't have to say nothing. He kind of had his own Castillo glare to her. And then he shows her the copy of this evidence report, which was in a plastic bag. And Crockett asks her if it was her who leaked the address. Crockett pretty much gets pissed off here when she says nothing and yells, why? And then she starts going into her confession here, maybe to divert why, but she tells him that she's an addict. They leave the hospital. They stop at an unknown location. I think it was like along the water here. And then Teresa tells him that she was using codeine and Dilaudid for back pain. And then once she could no longer get legal script, she bought Dilaudid on the streets. She says she only uses it to get by. Crockett tells her she's a junkie, which is very, very plausible here. He asks why she didn't come for him for help. And then she tells him that he would have then have to done his job as a cop and obviously bust her, right? He tells her she's involved in a conspiracy and needs the whole story to help her.
Doc.
The surgeon who fused my vertebrae said that I'd have pain off and on, but didn't know how much. So I took codeine for about a year, and then I went to Dilaudid.
When did you start shooting?
When I got warned for the Dilaudid scripts. Then I went on to fentanyl. Then I got another warning, so I went to the streets. That's why I've been getting the Dilaudid I've been taking when I'm with you.
How could you let this happen?
Look, I only do enough to get by. I don't party on it, and I don't overdo it.
Overdo it?
Okay, In this scene, she's telling her story, which, okay, she kind of owes it to him why she's doing this. But the big picture here and the whole reason is he's kind of in a pinch because she screwed him over by allowing these, not necessarily allowing, but getting these guys to blow up the warehouse, right? It's
right. I mean, he's in a jam.
Go ahead.
As Stiplitz used to say on NYPD Blue, he's in a jackpot.
Yeah. It's good that she's telling her story of why she's using this stuff, but that's secondary. At least in my opinion, that's secondary. But we'll see how this plays out. Tim?
Yes. So now we're outside the courthouse again, this federal courthouse, U.S. courthouse, a.k.a. state courthouse. I don't know. Maybe it's in the same
building. Maybe it was a private courthouse. Building. Maybe it was a private courthouse and the city was just leasing it and the name of the company was U.S. Courthouse.
One of these unanswered questions of this episode. So anyway, outside this courthouse, the DA reads a statement. There is no connection between the warehouse explosion and a widespread vice corruption as evidence narrows it down. One detective who has been suspended pending investigation. Crock and Tubbs are leaving the courthouse as this press conference is going on. IED officers approach Crockett and they tell him he is being watched and can no longer handle investigative duties. They're grounding him. They're just basically admin duties. What can you say? He's in a jackpot right now.
Stay inside, stay in your room, no TV. You can't go out with your friends.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
Been there, done that. So now we're at the treatment center here where Teresa is admitted. Crockett visits with the administrator of the center. She tells him that she cannot get the help that she needs there at the treatment center. A facility up north, which specializes in treating healthcare professionals, would be more suited for her, which makes sense. I mean, this is probably like an entry-level, first-time normal people falling into this type of thing, but healthcare professionals, they know how to work the system. They know how to work the system, period. Don't tell me they don't. They know how to work the system. Say what you want to hear, all that stuff. So probably something would be more kind of like a prison, I would have to assume, right?
Just a little bit more strict.
Right, right. Crockett tells this administrator that he can help her there. The administrator, Doc, asks what will happen when he goes undercover for weeks or months at a time. And she's by herself. Crockett tells her that he'll give up vice to get her well. I don't see that happening. And then the doctor reminds Crockett that he busted her. And if she loses her medical license, she's going to blame him. Makes sense. Crockett says he had no choice. And the doctor tells him he may have saved her life, which I guess is the end goal here, obviously.
Yes.
Crockett tells the doctor that he has to believe Teresa understands this, which, being a licensed doctor, this would be expected of her. So right. We'll see where this leads.
Well, I think that he's putting a lot of faith that she's going to understand that he had no choice but to bust her. So, you know, he's putting a lot of stock in that. And again, we'll see what happens later. Now we're at a bathroom scene. Don't know where it was at, but we find Tubbs working over Rudy to get info so Wyatt doesn't walk. Basically, he's dunking his head in a toilet. You know, the whole drown you thing if you don't give me the information. Trudy is also present at this scene, and I believe that's the only time she's in this episode. Rudy tells Tubbs that he gave the address to some dude named Arzola. Rudy tells Tubbs that Arzola was last staying at the Carlisle Hotel. Tubbs tells Trudy to let Crockett know he's en route there, and Trudy reminds him, hey, he's suspended. He says, tell him anyway.
The buyer's a suspension. This woman gets leaned on, and I hear you on 23rd Street flashing first-class tickets. I need an update. Tonight, sucker. Wyatt's gonna walk tomorrow.
I want my lawyer, man.
See him in there. You see him, huh? Huh?
Huh? Y'all, man. All I did was give him the paper with the address, okay? I swear I ain't had nothing to do with that explosion, man. Yeah,
who'd you give it to?
Oh, come on.
Who'd you give it to?
Some dude named Arzola, man.
Where is he now?
I don't know, man. He was cooling out the car lot. He might have booked by now.
You better hope he's still out. Carl Crockett, tell him to meet me at the car lot.
Hey, Tim, before you continue, Carlisle Hotel. What's the significance here in Mad?
I don't remember.
It's where we saw Gumby in episode one.
Oh, that's the original Gumby.
Okay. 5,000 corners in Greater Miami area. And Gumby here has got to pick this one. That was outside the Carlisle. But I digress. Continue, sir.
So after all that, Tubbs and Stan arrive at the Carlisle and immediately see Arzola and yell to him. Why do these cops do that instead of just putting a little sneak up on him? Because they got to have another shootout beginning, and the pair chase down Arzola. Crockett arrives and blocks Arzola's path and runs him off the road in his getaway car. Both of them exit their vehicles, and Crockett tells him, Arzola, we can make a deal here. For whatever reason, Arzola steps in the road, not cognizant of what's going on, and he gets hit and killed by another car. So that takes that piece of evidence that they could have garnered with him, and it's now down the toilet.
Maybe he was rooming with Gumby, huh?
Maybe he's rooming with Gumby.
So the DA visits Teresa. She offers to go through Rudy to meet with Wyatt and tell him she will exchange one of the surveillance tapes for a pound of heroin. The DA says Rudy isn't going to be the problem to set this up. He cautions Teresa that because of her involvement with Crockett, IAD doesn't care what she does to help him out. She's not their problem. Crockett is. Crockett shows up with the administration doc. He and the DA have pretty much a sidebar discussion here. And then he nixes Teresa going undercover. The DA tells Crockett that she's going to get 2 years probation. And then Crockett in turn tells him no matter what she does, it won't save her medical license, which is true here. I mean, she's going to be screwed no matter what. The DA says that this is their last and best shot at Wyatt. Get her to go undercover or somebody. Three cops died in the warehouse. And he tells Crockett that he's going to go down if Teresa doesn't make this deal here with Wyatt. Crockett offers himself to bring the tape, but the DA says no, as Crockett busted Teresa. So they think that Wyatt's going to see right through this. Crockett says he's going to paint himself as a cop with a shaky rep looking for a deal. Now, you know, Wyatt's probably going to think that in his head as well. Crockett's crooked. Okay, I could play games. We'll see. The DA says IAD's got to approve this. And then Crockett tells him that he'd make it happen. Crockett tells the DA to set up a conversation with IAD to get this ball rolling here. So Crockett and Teresa talk, and she says that he should let her do the deal. And Crockett says that she doesn't need to prove anything to him. Let him take care of it. She's tertiary, I guess you could say. She's worried about her license, and Crockett tells her that they will work through this together. Crockett professes his love for her and tells her to get better.
So now we're back at OCB, and Crockett runs down the white bus with IED. The IED officer tells Crockett that Crockett is his problem, not Wyatt. He agrees with Crockett, and Marty tells him he will get the credit for the bust. That's just what it is. So we're going to dangle the carrot in front of this guy. IED hands over the responsibility for Crockett to Marty. Marty tells the DA to have Rudy set up the meet. Later in the office, Stan and Crockett are listening to 10-year-old depositions that were involving Wyatt. Marty then gets a call and then tells Tubbs that the Wyatt meet is in 30 minutes. Gina fields a call from Surfside from Dr. Cheney, who is the admin doctor. We learned that now. And tells Crockett that is urgent. This is the only time that Gina's in this episode. Cheney tells Crockett that Teresa received bad news from the licensing board, and then she just bolted from Surfside. And here we go again, back to a more strict, more lockdown facility, you know, up north that's being offered to her. Tubbs says, I'll take care of finding Teresa, and Crockett goes to the meet.
There'll be a directional mic outside the door at all times. You'll be able to hear every word that I say to Wyatt.
Wyatt's not my problem. You're my problem.
Damn it, don't you see? You got nothing to lose here. If I can't get next to Wyatt, nothing changes. But if I bag him, it simplifies your investigation. Hell, I'll even paint it that you thought of suspending me, just so he'd buy that I was dirty. You can have the medals. I just want Wyatt.
I'm handing them over to you. Anything gets out of line, I'm coming after you too.
Dun, dun, dun. So now we're at an unknown location here. We see Rudy counting some money outside of a black car. And as he walks away, we see the good Dr. Teresa shooting up inside of this black car. Crockett arrives to Wyatt's place to make this deal for the tape here. And then Marty and Stan are outside in the surveillance van listening in. Stan is concerned that Crockett is pretty much wound tight. And I don't think Castillo even said a word. Crockett plays a tape for Wyatt of Wyatt being recorded for a 10-key deal at $35 a pop. Stan manufactured his tape allegedly from the depositions, only 10 seconds worth, just to make it believable. Wyatt has to pay Crockett for the rest. Wyatt takes this bait. Tubbs calls Marty and tells him that Teresa OD'd and she's barely breathing. So back at Wyatt's here, Crockett asks Wyatt for the same deal that Arzola got for the warehouse job. Crockett is just going to be finishing the job that he started. Wyatt gets in Crockett's face and he gets his kind of psychotic look on his face and tells him that he buys cops like Crockett. And then Crockett just calmly and coolly just stares. Wyatt tells him that Arzola got $100K to do the warehouse job. And then Wyatt sets the price for $300K a week.
I'm not sure if it's $300K a week or just 300. It's got to be something more than $300 a week. I didn't quite get that.
Right. Or maybe $300K total. Who knows? Mm-hmm. Crockett then goes ballistic and beats on Wyatt. Marty and Stan hop in here and intervene. Marty tells Crockett that Teresa OD'd and is at the county hospital. And now at the hospital here in a quick scene, Teresa wakes up in her hospital bed and Crockett tells her everything's going to be okay. Yeah, we'll see about that, right?
What do you want for it? I'll take the same thing you gave Arzola to do the warehouse.
Is that all you want?
Seems fair. Since I'm finishing the job he started.
Who the hell do you think you are? You come on to me, Joey Wyatt. I buy cops like you to clean up after my dogs. I'll cut your skagged out squeeze's head off. You don't come on to me.
It was a freak from the get-go.
So now after the bust, Wyatt is being denied bond at his hearing. IED approaches Tubbs and asks where Crockett is so he could thank him. Tubbs tells IED that Crockett was taking care of something else, but he'd pass it on. At the hospital, Surfside again, Crockett tells Therese about a program in Hartford that specializes in addict doctors. Dr. Cheney endorsed that program, and Crockett tells Teresa this would be best for her. She wants to stay with Crockett. He tells her he loves her, but she won't get any better here in Miami. She thinks that he's just trying to dump her, but then quickly changes her tune and says, you know, she understands his position. You know, they basically say they will miss each other. And it was kind of, they were hugging each other as that scene fades. Then we come to Crockett sitting waterside in his vehicle. He's talking to Tubbs by phone. He tells Tubbs he will call him in the morning. Then we see Sonny staring at the ring that is sitting on his dash. And we as it pans out, we see that he's back on surveillance duty, just business as usual.
All right, let's cover the ratings for this episode. IMDb gives this a 7.7. Tim, what do you think?
It seems about right. It wasn't anything super spectacular. You know, we see here that Crockett is head over heels in love with the good doc, and he's willing to give up Vice so he could be our side during the recovery. The only other appearance of Teresa was in the last episode, Duty and Honor. And I have a question here. How long were they dating before he decided he wanted to pop the question, get married to her? Months? Years? It's just a question, you know, one of them unanswered questions. But if it was just like weeks, he really became enthralled by her. He wanted to do the right thing and help her, but Dr. Cheney then offered him that reality check when she reminded him that, hey, you're the one that busted her. And he, Crockett again, still really in love with her, believes she would understand this. But then it's like, you know, what would their life be like if she loses her medical license? You know, what's she going to do? Is she going to blame him? When Teresa OD'd, I believe Sonny received the message loud and clear. His love for her would not sustain her recovery attempts. They part ways as she's going to head off to the recovery center in Hartford. One final question. Did she get probation or totally let off the hook for her part in the conspiracy where three cops died? An episode filled with the real issue of addiction that is very prevalent in our society today.
Tim, go with me here on this one as a description. Mm-hmm. I liken this episode to a firework that you see, like maybe in Crazy Kaplan's firework store or Phantom Fireworks out in Indiana.
Yep.
This thing looks so awesome on the shelves. The description is awesome. The pictures shows what could be like maybe a nuclear explosion of a display. But then you bring it home across state lines. Never done that before. And then you light this thing, and then it's nothing more than a smoke bomb with a few sparks shooting out. Pretty much a box of snakes would be more exciting. This had a whole bunch of potential going for it. It just kind of fell flat on its face, you know. The ending, it could have been a lot more. Could have been a lot more. Great story again. In the very baby-faced Helena Bonham Carter and other good actors, but again, just fell flat on its face. And also with Wyatt, I thought there was going to be one more gotcha moment at the end. Even after he was remanded into custody, I thought maybe he would have somebody take Teresa out, so to speak. You know, just one more gotcha to Vice. Since that didn't happen, I then thought there would have been more of a showing to Teresa's past, the recovery or something. Obviously, we know they shipped her off, but maybe in the end, I'm just guessing she went back to her home planet. She's gone. She came in, did this, and now she's gone.
Yeah.
And like you said, why was Crockett ready to pop the question as far as flow of the show went so quickly? She was in duty of honor for what, all of 30 seconds maybe?
Yeah, not much.
You know, it's out of character for him to want to do this. Usually it's his girl of the night or girl of the weekend or whatever, and then you never see her again. So it was a good episode as far as Crockett centered. You know, he's another focus of attention here. It was your evidence that this chick saw and gave to the bad guy. So all the vices here, kind of, sort of, in Gita and Judy. And then Castillo hanging with Switek in the van. I thought they should have put the bug back on there while Castillo was there just for spite. Mm-hmm.
That would be cool. So So now we're going to cover the music for this episode. First, we have Jewel by Propaganda, and that was the opening raid on Wyatt's home. And then there's Wasteland by The Mission UK, where Switek and Tubbs chase Arzola in a car.
And some Jan Hammer music. We've got Teresa. That's the Evidence Warehouse explosion. Teresa doing drugs. And then Crockett confronting Teresa about the case being found, the case file being found at the crime scene. I absolutely love this one. It's nice, smooth, mellow tune from him.
Now on to the Goof's fun facts and location. Our first fun fact, Helena Bonham Carter was only 20 years old when this episode was made. Far too young to be a real doctor unless she was a prodigy that graduated early.
Doogie Howser.
Yes, kind of like that. Don Johnson was 37 when this episode was filmed.
And we've got a location here. Two luxury Art Deco hotels are featured in the scene where Switek and Tubbs find and chase Arzola. The first being the Carlisle. That was from episode one where Crockett and Eddie Rivera are standing in Brother's Keeper. And then we've got the Cardoza Hotel.
In a goof, we have the climactic fight scene. White stunt double is clear seen when Crockett throws him over the chair. Not only are his face and hair obviously different, an elbow pad can be seen protruding. It is then absent when Crockett is punching White in the face.
And our final location, the southwest corner of Dodge Island at the Port of Miami. That's where Sonny and Teresa talk. And the end scene with Crockett alone.
Let's go over the trivia portion of this episode. In Cuba Libre episode, we ask, what kind of a car does Slade drive? The answer, Chrysler Fifth Avenue.
And this show's trivia question is, now we're going to want you to put your firefighter, fire inspector helmets on here and think, people. What is obvious about the emergency exit signs in the hospital? You could post your answers on this episode's Facebook post or email us at MiamiVice@duck.com.
We have arrived at Snurd's Chalkboard of Wisdom, where we hope to inspire, enlighten, or make you snicker a little. In both the world of Miami Vice and our current world at large, we encounter many challenges we work to overcome. In the interest of creating a family-friendly atmosphere through the show and on our social media, we would like to offer some parting thoughts, a simple quote, phrase, or words of encouragement, or a funny quip to you, our listeners, because without you, our friends, we'd be just talking ourselves. And we say friends because that's what we consider all of you who follow our show and social media. This episode's quote is, the truth is, unless you let go, unless you forgive yourself, unless you forgive the situation, unless you realize that the situation is over, you cannot move forward. Steve Maraboli.
And that's a wrap for today's episode. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in and joining us on this review. We hope you find this episode exciting and entertaining. If you enjoyed it, please consider subscribing to the podcast and following us on our social media channels to stay updated to our latest episodes. On Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube, we are Vice of Miami Podcast. Your support definitely means everything to us. And if you got a spare moment, we'd be incredibly grateful if you could leave us a rating and review on those channels. Thanks again for listening, and we can't wait to share more with you soon. And again, a happy new year to everybody. We hope it's a good, prosperous, and healthy new year for everyone.
So, we'll catch you the next time on the Vice of Miami podcast on show number 65, covering episode 17, The Afternoon Plane. Now,
mellow out, pal.